I'm reading from Matthew chapter 16, starting with verse 24. Then Jesus told his disciples, "If any want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world, but forfeits his life? Or what can he give in return for his life? For the Son of Man is to come with his angels in glory and his Father, and then he will repay everyone according to what he has done." I'm sure not many of you remember this. Perhaps not many of you were here that day, but years ago when the first time that Tom was stepping down from serving here before he went, you know, they ended up going to Salado for a while before William came, I tried out and I preached a sermon that turned out to be somewhat controversial. The controversial part is I said I believe that there were Christians outside the churches of Christ. And I used the example of Mother Teresa, who's actually in the Catholic Church. And apparently that bothered some people here, at least at the time. But kind of what got overshadowed was maybe, you know, with all of that and stuff, was the second part of my sermon. And I talked about, in the second part of my sermon, the verse right before the verse here that I wanted to focus on this morning, which is verse 26, but verse 25. And I mentioned that morning, it's the most common quoted statement of Jesus in the Gospels, that he who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it. It appears six times. That verse is quoted six times in the four Gospels. John's is a little bit different. He says something along the lines, "He who loves his life will lose it," and things. But it's virtually a very similar or very identical quote. And so the second part of that sermon, I talked about losing our lives and the whole idea of taking up our cross and following Jesus. I was not trying to make the road to heaven easy. I was trying to talk about what sincere discipleship really looked like. This morning, I want to focus on the verse, though, more right after that, after he says, you know, that, you know, those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake will find it. Verse 26, King James has, "For what is man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own soul? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul?" And I mean, it seems very clear, you know, what does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own life or his own soul? But it is kind of interesting that he says this right after this call to take up our cross and follow Jesus and talks about how by losing our life we find it. So there is this call to take up their cross. There is this somewhat paradoxical statement that by losing life we find true life. And then, and only then, do we have this statement, "What does it profit if we gain the whole world, but lose our own life, or what does a man give in exchange for his life?" And this really, you know, this kind of idea actually really resonated with me even at, you know, 21, 22, around 22 when I first came back to Christianity. It was right around my 19th birthday. I don't know when exactly when I became an atheist, and somewhere in the fall of 91. And it was right around my 22nd birthday that I came back to Christianity. I don't remember the exact date or the date, but it was right around that time. But even at 22, I could see that this life is transient and temporary. Maybe it was losing a brother when I was 15. Maybe it was losing my first grandparent, my grandfather, my mom's father when I was in high school. Maybe it was my grandmother on my dad's side coming down with Alzheimer's. Maybe it was losing some of the passions that I had back a few years earlier in high school. But the idea that this world and this life was temporary really, you know, resonated with me from a very early age. I could see that this world was transient. If there is life beyond the grave, as I believe that there is, and I think most people here this morning believe there is, that's part of the reason you're here this morning, is then Jesus' statement to me seems like one of the most obvious statements in the world. It doesn't profit us anything, even if we were to gain everything in the world, if we were to have the big house, the nice car, everything that we think this world offers us, it doesn't offer anything to gain the whole world and forfeit our soul. This life is transient and temporary, and the only chance we have to get out of this world alive is if there is life beyond the grave. But I want to come back to this morning, this idea right before, right before he says that, you know, what does it gain, profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his whole soul? This whole idea of taking up our cross, of following Jesus and things like that. But maybe to get back to that, I want to approach it in a different way. C.S. Lewis in the book Mere Christianity gives this quote when he's talking about hope. And he's kind of mentioning, and I'll read it here in just a second, about how hope is, you know, a lot of people think of hope as escapism. But listen to what he says. He says, hope is one of the theological virtues. This means that a continual looking forward to the eternal world is not, as some modern people think, a form of escapism or wishful thinking, but one of the things that a Christian is meant to do. It does not mean that we are to leave the present world as it is. If you read history, you find the Christians that did the most for the present world were those that thought the most of the next. The apostles themselves who set foot on the conversion of the Roman Empire, the great men who built up the Middle Ages, the English evangelicals who abolished the slave trade, all left their mark on earth precisely because their minds were preoccupied, or their minds, he doesn't say preoccupied, their minds were occupied with heaven. And then there is Colossians chapter 3 that I do want to call your attention to that Rick read from a moment ago. And listen again to what Paul says there. He says, so if you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above. Or some translations say, set your mind on the things above. And we hear that and we think, set our mind on things above. You know, this might give images or think about people who go up in, you know, that kind of isolate these monastics who went off and they lived by themselves and they just thought about heavenly things. And I don't hate the monastics. There's some of the monastics I really have respect for, but that's an aside. But it's not that. It's not people who go off and just think this. Listen to what he says. He says, set your mind on things above and then get a picture of what that looks like, verse 5. Put to death, therefore, whatever in you is earthly. Fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, and greed, which is idolatry. Upon these things, the wrath of God is coming upon those who are disobedient. Verse 12, as God's holy ones, chosen ones, holy and beloved, clothe yourselves with compassion, kindness, humility, meekness, and patience. Bear with one another. Forgive one another. And he talks about love and things like that. But setting our minds on things above means we get rid of the evil vices, things like fornication, impurity, passion, evil desire, greed, and means that we clothe ourselves with virtues like compassion, kindness, humility, and patience. And I guess another way of saying that is setting our minds on things above has everything to do with how we approach our life in this present world that we live in. It makes a difference on our ethics. It makes a difference on our values. It makes a difference in how we treat other people. That if we focus on Jesus Christ, who is seated in the heavens at the right hand of God, it has implications on how we live our life on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and not only on Sunday. It's part of the reason we're here this morning. But it makes a difference in how we live our lives every single day of the week. Just like going back to Matthew chapter 16, realizing that it doesn't profit you anything to gain the whole world and to lose your soul, is tied up with what Jesus said right before that, with taking up our cross and following Jesus. Or it's also connected to what comes right after that in verse 27 when he says, "For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and he will reward each person according to what they have done." That's the verse right after. What does it profit a man if he gains the whole world and he loses his soul? The Son of Man is coming back, and he will reward us according to what he has done. Now, I would agree with those who might be quick to point out that we don't somehow earn salvation. But how we live our life in this world does have something to do with the judgment. It shows who is sincere and who is not sincere. But my overall point is living for the life to come and realizing that there is a final judgment and God is going to judge, you know, the living and the dead, and that realizing that there is a life after this life makes a difference in how we live in the here and now. It's because we believe that there is a life beyond the grave that we as Christians should be people of integrity. We should be honest about what we believe whether what we believe is popular or what we believe is unpopular. We should tell what we believe is true. We should practice love towards all. This morning in Bible class with the young adults class, we looked at the story of the Good Samaritan. And the question comes up, who is my neighbor? Who is the person I need to love? And the answer is, you try to love whoever you come across. We practice kindness. We practice unselfishness. We live in the here and now based on the fact that there is a final judgment and that there is a life to come. If this world is where it is at, and if this world is all that there is, then Paul's statement, you know, that he makes about the poet in 1 Corinthians 15, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die, would make a lot of sense. But if there is a resurrection and a life to come, then we need to be people who seek to live spiritual lives. And a spiritual life, again, doesn't mean we go off and live in the desert and live all by ourselves and I'm all for prayer, but it doesn't mean we pray 24 hours a day. A spiritual life means that we treat other people the way God intends us to treat them, and that we love God with all our heart, soul, and mind, and make that a part of who we are and who our nature and character is. There was a book written in the early 90s. It was published by ACU Press. It was a book entitled The Worldly Church. It was written by Leonard Allen and Philip Hughes and Michael Weed. And what was interesting, and I would, if you get a copy of it, go back and read it. So I don't trust my representation. I haven't read it in a long, long time. But what kind of struck me, or kind of remember about it, when it was talking about the worldly church, is it wasn't talking about the things I would think, you know, you talk about. It wasn't talking about drugs and alcohol and sex and the fat, you know, and things like that that we normally associate with worldly. And of course, there is a lot of that in the world that we live in today. But it was talking about the fact that we, as a Christian community, are getting more focused on this world. It could be family, friends, and career. And I don't think the point of the book is to say that family, friends, or career is unimportant, but I do think it kind of made the point that if we're focused on this world and we lose focus of the fact that we as Christians are made for eternity, it has a severe impact, negative impact, on our ability to live the Christian lives that we need to live in the here and now. I think of Jesus' admonition. He says, "Do not store up treasures on earth where moth and rust consume and where thieves break in and steal, but store up treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust consume, and where thieves do not break in and steal." And he says, "For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Well, if you go to a parallel passage in Luke chapter 12, he talks about storing up treasures in heaven, and he uses the example, he says, "Give alms and store up treasures in heaven." And almsgiving is, of course, giving to the poor. Now, I do know some in today it may be harder because we live in a world of entitlements. We live in a world where there may not be poor on street corners the way there were in the ancient Jewish world. And it may be harder to determine, and I know there's fraud and other things out there, but the same principle still applies, that storing up treasure in heaven has to do with how we live and where we place our value here on earth. We can give to good causes. We can give to causes other than just giving to ourselves and buying a fancier car or buying a fancier house or all of these sorts of things. We find people who are in need, but it can be other things besides just money. It can be time and other things that we use. But I guess the main point is this world is not where it's at. And we as Christians are made for eternity. And realizing that we are made for eternity should impact the way that we live every day of our lives. It doesn't make the Christian life ineffective that actually realizing that we're made for eternity will be the motivation that enables us to really and sincerely live the Christian life every day of our life here on the earth. If anyone needs to come this morning, we invite you to come while together we stand and we sing.
I am resolved. No.